A sad day indeed, as Louisiana has lost an ambassador today, and we will miss him dearly. We'll go on with the show, but we'll forever remember Tony Robichaux. Today, Wednesday, July 3rd, 2019.
And Bregman hits this one well, right center field. That ball's pretty deep. That ball is off the wall. Altuve around third. He'll score. Back-to-back-to-back doubles for the Astros. It's 8-7.
And the next delivery, that's a shot right up the middle. That's going to fall in for a base hit, being waved in and coming in to score easily, as it turns out, will be Fletcher, as the ball was mishandled just a bit by DeShields out there. And the Angels are back on top in this ball game, leading by a run. It's now 4-3.
Runner goes, swinging a line drive to the right center field toward the gap. Gomes around second, heading for third. Splits the outfielders all the way to the wall. Gomes around third. He's coming home. The relay is missed. Gomes scores! And a curly W is in the box.
Fitting that we playing highlights of baseball. Because on this day, one of baseball's greats is no longer with us. It's with an incredible amount of sadness that we found out today that Louisiana Ragin' Cajun baseball coach Tony Robichaux passed away at the age of 57. He suffered a heart attack on June 23rd and underwent two subsequent surgeries to no avail. He was, however, surrounded by family and loved ones. Coach Robe, tremendous human being. Our thoughts and prayers to those left behind, his wife, Colleen, his three children, Ashley, Justin, and Austin, his eight grandchildren, Lon Paul, Ava, Sylvia, Liam, Olivia, Levi Moody, Evelyn, and Rosalind Robichaux. He's also survived by his father, Ray Robichaux, and three brothers. Baseball seems so insignificant, but he did such a wonderful job, and the numbers speak for themselves. In 7 years with McNeese State, he won 263 games and earned two NCAA tournament appearances. In 1994, he was hired as the head coach of then USL at the age of 33 years young. In 25 seasons, Robichaux racked up 910 wins, led the Ragin' Cajuns to a dozen appearances in the NCAA regionals, four NCAA super regionals, and an NCAA College World Series. But that just minimizes what Tony Robichaux, Coach Robe, was all about. He was a molder of men, a deeply religious person who honestly took more pleasure and satisfaction in preparing his players for life, for faith, for fatherhood, than he did about how many hits you had, how low was your ERA, and how many wins did we get. He was a leader. No ifs, ands, buts about it. Our governor, John Bell Edwards, tweeted just recently, Coach Robichaux represented the best of Louisiana. For more than three decades, he was a great mentor who cared for his players on and off the field at both McNeese State and UL Lafayette. We lost an ambassador for our state today, and we will miss him dearly. 57 years young. On a personal note, always had time for me. would tweet him to ask him to come on my shows, and he would always say, only for you, Jordy. Such a gentleman's gentleman. A great coach. But honestly, and we say this too flippantly, but honestly, an even better human being. It's a very, very difficult day. I was all excited. We've got a couple of days off. We'll have national programming on tomorrow. We'll do the best of shows on Friday. My daughter's starting to feel a little bit better. Everything was on an uptick, and then I got the word about Coach Robe, and it just literally deflated me. 57's way too young. Way too young. How do you fill those shoes? You don't. You don't. I don't know. It's so darn sad. Always with a story that belied a lesson. Always faith related, always deflected any praise toward himself, and always gave praise to God. It was always about God and his players. It was never about him. So I ask, please, if you can say a prayer for the Robichaux family, that would be just the right thing to do. As we get ready to celebrate the independence of our great country. And it was because of great men, and Tony Robichaux was a great man and will always, always be remembered. Not only for what he did as a coach, and he was one of the best. He's on my Mount Rushmore of baseball coaches in the state of Louisiana. He just is. But more so in the lessons that he shared and the people that he influenced in his 57 short years. It's just remarkable. And praise is coming from all parts of the world. People that Tony touched upon in whatever shape or form or manner, no matter how big or how little. He was the man that could look in the mirror and be pleased with himself because he told no lies and his faith was so strong. Rest in peace, Tony Robichaux. You'll be missed. You'll never be forgotten. And my thoughts and prayers to all of your family, all of your players, all of your coaches throughout the years who I know are just devastated by the happenings of today. Wow. It's just like a punch in the gut. It just is. A remarkable man. He will truly be missed. But Tony would say, go on, do your thing. Don't dwell on me. It's never been about me. So we will go on with the show, as they say. And with a heavy heart, let me tell you what we have going on. And I will give you my very best in the next 1 hour and 49 minutes. We will keep a stiff upper lip, and we will go on with it. Garrett Temple will join us shortly. What are his thoughts as he joins the Brooklyn Nets with the acquisitions of Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. Sam Amico is a national NBA writer and broadcaster. He will join us after that. We'll get some of his thoughts on the Pelicans and what the job that they have done. Henry Hayes will join us as well. We'll play the what if Kawhi game. What if Kawhi goes to Toronto? What if Kawhi goes to the Clippers, etc., etc. In hour number two, we'll have our Hot Topics segment. Adrian Morgan is going to make his ninth appearance at the Nathan's 4th of July hot dog eating contest. He's got no shot against Joey Chestnut, but he's going back again. It's a lot of fun consuming a lot of hot dogs in a short period of time. We'll get an update from Adrian live from the boardwalk. Michael Huguenin, hump day with Huguenin. We'll close things out with birthday wishes, etc. The show must go on. Rest in peace, Tony Robichaux. We'll be right back.
Taking the hottest topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back to the Jordy Hultberg Show, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. A lot of you are taking a break from work, maybe a little bit early, so be careful on the highways and byways as you're ready to take a nice little holiday weekend. It's been a nice turn of events for a near and dear friend of mine who I respect and admire because of his hard work, his leadership skills, and now he's... Man, he's got a chance to do something that everybody that ever laces up sneakers wants, and that's a chance to play for a championship in the next year or two. Garrett Temple is the newest member of the Brooklyn Nets, along with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, and Garrett's kind enough to join us on this July the 3rd. Garrett, congratulations, buddy. I know it's been kind of that's the way the league works a little bit. You've been here, there, and now you're up in Brooklyn. What were your initial thoughts when your agent and you and all parties came to an agreement?
First of all, thanks for having me again, Jordy. My thoughts were I was very elated. I was actually already in New York on some player association business. We had a meeting that took place on Sunday. And so when I talked to Sean Marks and the rest of the Brooklyn free agent, you know, front office staff, obviously I had an idea Kyrie would be coming, but, you know, the KD thing broke as well, and I was just very excited to be a part of the team.
I mean, it changed the landscape significantly. Now, you're not going to have KD for a while, but when he comes back and this team is fully assembled and fully loaded, how do you foresee the game of basketball for you?
I see it working out well, working out to my benefit. Obviously, and other guys, honestly, on this team that were here last year, the year before, a Caris LeVert who can really create his own shot. Spencer Dinwiddie can create his own shot. When you have guys that can create and force help or force double teams, it makes it easy for guys like me. You know, all I got to do is get ready, knock down a few threes, you know, defend my man like I'm capable of, and just be that calm voice in the locker room and hopefully, you know, do what I need to do to play a few more years.
Yeah, I'm with you. Yeah, and that has been a great story because you have lasted the test of time, and I fully believe it's because you work hard, you're a great leader, you don't cause issues in a locker room, you get along with people, and you do what the coaches tell you to do, and that's the secret to success, I believe.
No question. I mean, you know, for anybody that gets undrafted or goes late second round, you know, more times than not, when you get your shot, more times than not, when you get on the team, you're going to be 12th, 13th, 14th guy. So those guys have to be low maintenance, hardworking, guys that are very coachable. So, you know, when you work hard and you have the right mindset, whenever you get that opportunity, if you're talented enough, more times than not, you're going to produce and it's going to work out well for you. And that's what I've tried to do, just be coachable, you know, put myself in position. Can you hear me? Yeah, put myself in position to help the team and be a positive influence in the locker room.
you are certainly that, Garrett Temple, kind enough to join us, newest member of the Brooklyn Nets. Are you ready for the circus that's going to follow this team? Are you prepared for that?
I think so. I spent a little time in Miami when LeBron and Dwayne Wade were there. We went to China for training camp, and Chris Bosh, obviously this will be interesting. KD's not going to be able to play this first year, but it's still going to be a lot of hoopla, obviously, us being in New York and stuff. The thing I'm not prepared for is this housing price in New York City. I got to figure out a way to try to do something while I'm up here.
That was my next question. I mean, you've been all over the place, and you're used to this packing up and moving along. And what happens now? Because chemistry is so important. It is the off season, but is there really an off season? Players are in the gym working out. So what is Garrett Temple's next step?
Yeah, we're working out. You know, guys, it's not like the old days where guys wait till training camp to get in shape. I've actually been in the gym probably the last 3 weeks to a month. And I've actually already talked to Coach Atkinson. I'm headed out to Vegas. I'm headed out to Brooklyn for a physical, then headed out to Vegas for our vet camp. We're having a little vet camp for a few days out there. Watch the summer league team play a little bit. And then I'm actually going to – usually I go to whatever city I play in. I usually go right after Labor Day, but this year I'm probably going to go a good bit earlier and try to, like you said, build up that chemistry and that camaraderie. Because plus, obviously, it's New York City. Who doesn't like being out there?
Just out of curiosity, does the club help you find a place to live? And knowing that you're not going to be the extravagant type of person, you're preparing for the future, and I love that about you. Do they help you in any way?
Yeah, they do. They recommend a realtor. They send places for your girlfriend or your significant other to get her nails done, hair done, things of that sort. So they definitely look out for you, especially, I mean, the best organizations do what Brooklyn is doing, filling all the boxes. Not everybody does that, but most organizations help a good amount to some extent.
You've been such a friend of our program, so I'm going to ask you a favor. Can you get me Jay-Z and Beyonce on the radio? Can you hook me up?
I'm just trying to get a handshake and a hug from Beyonce. That's all I want. That's one of the first things my girlfriend said when I signed together. We may get to meet Beyonce and Jay-Z. So, and New York is her favorite city. So, I'm happy she's enjoying the place I'm going to be going to.
That is awesome. Garrett Temple with the Brooklyn Nets. Everybody thought it was going to be the New York Knicks, but it's not. Sean Marks has done a remarkable job. Kind of starting from scratch. And look, this was a team that made the playoffs a year ago, and he has done a remarkable job, and they just got two of the better players in the league to come on board. I think the sky's the limit.
He's done a remarkable job. You can't say, the thing that he's done and hiring Kenny Atkinson, a guy that nobody really knew who he was, he's done such a magnificent job with his hiring, with his, the player, the people he's picked, obviously, on the draft, the free agents he's signed with, Spencer Dinwiddie, Joe Harris, the trades he's made, obviously the situation they had when they first started after that trade was not great. So for them to bounce back like they have, it's been amazing.
Right, tell me right now, you're obviously driving in Brooklyn. What's the traffic like there?
So I'm actually in Baton Rouge right now. I leave to go to Brooklyn tomorrow night.
Oh.
Tomorrow night. Yeah. I had to come back home, get a few things settled, and so I'm headed out tomorrow night. But
I'm bringing a vehicle. That's the main thing. You gotta when you look for a house, you gotta find a house with parking, and the parking can't cost too much. And I was explaining to my brother how much, you know, houses and condos out there sell for $1,500 per square foot. So it's going to be real interesting. You know, whether you buy or rent, you know, sometimes my mindset, I don't really want to rent and spend and waste that much money, just throw away money. But, you know, do you want to spend $1.5 million for 1,400 square feet? So it's an interesting situation, but I'm happy, man. I'm happy to have to deal with this.
Just think back to the days when you were in high school. Did you ever think you'd say, I mean, I don't know if I want to buy that house for $1.5
million? man, who would have thought? You know, it's crazy. When I think back to high school, I never really thought about basketball and playing in the NBA. I wanted to, but it wasn't really anything that was, you know, concrete in my mind. So I'm just blessed beyond words.
All right. Well, you're heading to Brooklyn for a physical. You'll pass that. Then it's off to where do they put you guys up in Vegas? Just out of
curiosity.
That's
a great question. I haven't seen the itinerary yet. It's hopefully a pretty nice hotel. I doubt they'll put us in anything too shaggy. So, hopefully a pretty nice hotel, maybe on the strip. we'll see.
Life is good for one Garrett Temple. You have earned every bit of it. We are. I'm so happy and so proud for you, man. And God, what an experience! What fun it's going to be, not having to guard one of those two guys first off, and to be able to play with them. You'll play with Durant in your second year, but you get to play with Kyrie right away. So that'll be kind of fun, man. I look forward to watching it. Watch out for my Pelicans now. Pelicans going to be okay. They're going to be okay.
Yeah, definitely. First of all, you're right. I'm definitely happy that I don't have to guard either of those two guys. I told them that already. And you're right. The Pelicans, you know, stealing J.J. away from Philly was big for them. And obviously Zion and the other piece they got from the Lakers. But, you know, that J.J. Redick signing is going to be really great for them on the court, but also in the locker room for those young guys. And I'm anxious to see what they can do.
Safe travels, my friend. Give the best to all the family, and congratulations. I hope you find the right house at the right price, my friend. I really do.
Thanks a lot, Jordy. I appreciate it.
You take care. That's Garrett Temple of the Brooklyn Nets. Gets to play with Kyrie and KD. Kyrie, KD, and GT. Not bad. Not bad. Much more on the NBA front as we continue along with a heavy heart. Sam Amico, at Amico Hoops, a national perspective on what David Griffin and the Pelicans have done to date. That's coming up next here on the Jordy Helfrich Show. 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Helfrich Show on 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com, and on the app.
All right, welcome back. We continue the conversation on this July 4th Eve. And we wish everyone a very safe and happy holiday. It's time to play the what-if game. There's one domino left in the NBA in all rights and purposes, and that's Kawhi Leonard. So we got our buddy Henry Hayes to join us again for a what-if Kawhi segment. Henry, thanks for the time, buddy. How are you?
Every day is like Christmas, Jordy.
I hear you. All right. So, what if Kawhi decides to stay in Toronto?
If Leonard resigns in Toronto, which I would expect would be a one-year deal with a player option for year two, I think the Raptors become your immediate Eastern Conference favorites to repeat. I think Milwaukee is close, And, you know, we'll see what the Philadelphia 76ers do. But, you know, to me, Jordy, that puts the Raptors as the odds-on favorite to repeat. Western Conference, wide open. I think Utah, Denver, even the Lakers, if they don't get them, depending on how they fill their roster out. But I think the Raptors are the Eastern Conference favorite to repeat.
All right. It seems to me that I don't know what else Toronto could do. They kept their general manager. He said, I'm not going somewhere else. I'm staying put. I'm not going to Washington. They made some moves to solidify the roster. They win the whole thing. Maybe there's a caveat, but heck, you know, you get a couple of players injured. Maybe it doesn't happen that way, but that's the way it is. They managed his time properly. They gave him all the time off he needed during the regular season. And look at the results. So I don't know if Toronto could do any more than that they have. Let's go to the Western Conference. There seems to be two teams involved. And we'll start off with the Clippers because great organization, very wealthy owner. Jerry West knows what he's doing. Doc Rivers, very well respected. What if Kawhi goes to the Clippers?
Well, let me close the book real quick on the Toronto point, Jordy. You're right with everything you said. They have done everything they can do. But remember this. He didn't pick them. He was traded to Toronto by the Spurs once he made the trade. And so at the end of the day, despite their best effort, that's not his choice. Now, obviously, this would be. But I think that's the one piece that gets lost. Is he didn't pick them. He was sent there. And that's really the issue, macro and level up to all what's going on. Really not just the NBA, but it's really this player empowerment era of, like my wife, who is not a sports fan, asked me during the NBA draft, why can't they pick where they want to go play? Because in every other profession, you do. So anyway, that's another issue. If he signs with the Clippers are immediately in the mix, not the favorite, but I would say in the top three or four to be title relevant. And obviously, you change a little bit of the nature of Los Angeles. I think this is an interesting one to me, though, Jordy, because if he doesn't pick Toronto and he's going to go back to Los Angeles, the conventional wisdom starts to become the better basketball move is the Lakers. In terms of if he wants to be one of the only guys to ever win three rings, he might be the alpha on each team. Then the Lakers is the choice from a basketball move. But if he signs with the Clippers, if Doc Rivers, the roster's in place, although they'd have to get rid of Gallinari, you would think the Clippers would be in the top two or three in the Western Conference to win the NBA title.
One player with such an impact, Henry Hayes, kind enough to join us. What if Kawhi joins the Lakers? Is that the greatest triple threat in NBA? It's hard to say. Some of those Celtics teams, some of those Lakers teams with West and Baylor and Chamberlain. But modern basketball has got to be the best triumvirate ever.
You know, I'm glad you said that, Jordy, because we've fallen in love with this term super team. Let me tell you what. Go look at some of Bill Russell's Celtics teams in the 1960s. When you've got Bob Cousy, Bill Russell, you know, and on and on and on, Sam Jones, John Havlicek,
yeah.
Exactly. I mean, a lot of NBA fans aren't up to that. They didn't see those guys. Believe me when I tell you, those guys were no stiffs. And even in the 80s, I mean, look, at one point, Magic Johnson, James Worthy, and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar together. Larry Bird, Kevin McHale.
Yes.
You know, so they, again, they had rare is it the team that doesn't win with really, really good talent. So, you know, we've seen this before.
Right.
But in the modern age, Jordy, let's say 2000s on, yeah. Look, even those Miami Heat teams, which you had to this peak in terms of just physically doing things that we had never seen and may never see again. But I think it's fair to say that Chris Bosh was never as good as the third. And let me ask you, Jordy,
No. Let's
say he signs with the Lakers. Who's the third best?
Maybe so, LeBron.
You could make that argument.
Seriously, maybe.
The counter would be you need to see Davis, A, more healthy, and B, actually go win something. That's a fair argument that I'll listen to. But look, we've seen him in New Orleans when he's on systems go. I mean, there's simply no player like him in the NBA, and you can't guard him. So it's a tough question.
What if Kawhi goes to the Pelicans?
David Griffin is immediately knighted and sainted in the city. He retires.
Oh, my God. We got about a minute and a half left with Henry Hayes. So where does Henry Hayes think that Kawhi Leonard goes?
Yeah, it's really trending. Jordy, it's trending now that he's going to be a Laker. I think here's the one thing I just don't know. I don't know what they're doing with respect to the timeline. Some think that he's enjoying kind of having everybody on hold. Some think he's going to drop this on July 4th, which would ruin the break of anybody covering the NBA. everybody at ESPN would hate him. So, I don't know what – I think all the pitches have been made, and I think he's made his mind up. I think he's going to be a Laker, and I think it's going to be must-see TV. And look, whether you're a Laker fan or not, the Lakers are like Notre Dame, the Yankees, USC football. When they're good, the league is in better shape. And this obviously gives the league something to root against. And it's, like I said, it's must-see TV.
But he won't get the backlash that Kevin Durant got or LeBron James got when they made their moves. Nobody's going to vilify him, I think. Do you think they will?
I agree because we've seen the super teams. And, look, man, the guy's making his choice. But, no, it will not be like what LeBron got.
Henry, thank you, buddy. Have a great 4th of July with your beautiful family, buddy. Thank you.
You too, brother. Thank you.
All right, back for hour number two after this.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Can I just pull off another miracle?
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans!
Streaming live on the 103.7 The Game mobile app and online at 103.7thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won!
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
It's hour number two on a very, very dark day in Acadiana. And if you're just joining us, it's with the utmost of sadness that we report that Raging Cajun baseball coach Tony Robichaux has passed away at the age of 57. A lifetime baseball man, but a better man off the field than he was on the field. And as I was so eloquently sent an email from a friend of Coach Robe and a friend of mine, he said, Tony, it's not the ninth inning anymore. Your new ballpark is called heaven, and you got yourself quite a team. 57 years, way too young. And again, our heartfelt thoughts, prayers to his wife, Colleen, his three children, his eight grandchildren, his father, Ray, and his three brothers. A treasure in the state of Louisiana that we have lost. But he's in a better place, and he's coaching all the great ones now in a ballpark where it never rains, where they don't keep score, they just have fun. Rest in peace, Coach Robe. We do it every day at this time of day because Coach Robe would want us to do it. The show goes on. So without further ado, we take our daily walk around the sports water cooler. CD, let's hit that button one more time.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
Oh, CD, I know it's a sad day for all of us, you included. with the news that we got today. But, man, so sad. So sad.
Oh, trust me, Jordy. It's been a gut punch and a half over the last, let's say, few hours after kind of hearing the news, putting all the stuff together, and just kind of seeing the outpouring from everybody. Because I'll say this, Jordy, you know, before we kind of get to some lighter stuff, I grew up around the T, grew up around Tony Robichaux over the I've been alive for 30 years and probably spent probably 90% of my life around Robichaux in one way or another through baseball and just being around him and being under that learning tree, especially over the last couple of years. It hit like a ton of bricks when I saw that news. I'm still feeling it right now.
I always said he wanted players who are drinking from a water hose.
Yes,
that was
he did.
One of his classic statements. He always had a lesson to be told with stories surrounding it. He truly, truly missed a legendary figure in the game of baseball. And you're right, the outpouring of respect and love for the man, unfortunately, under these circumstances. He was, I guess the best thing I could say was he was genuine. He never put airs about himself. He was, what you saw is who he was. And he will be dearly missed. His contributions and his life lessons won't ever, ever be forgotten.
Oh, no, Jordy. We will never forget a lot of stuff that head coach Tony Robichaux said over the years, be it, you know, the old story about him putting blinders on a mule and just some of the great Robisms of all time. And, you know, I'm just thinking about him. That's what I've been thinking about over the course of this long 4th of July weekend, is some of the great Robisms of all time. And kind of just because I know here's kind of the I feel like this is the saddest part of it all, Jordy, is the fact that apparently he was in the middle of writing a book and that book will maybe never be truly finished.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, he had so much success as a coach, but it's not what he did on the field that people like me, and I'm sure you will remember him by. It's all the stories of faith. It's the stories of life lessons. It's the stories of believing in people when simply no one else believed in them, even themselves. But he believed in them, and he gave them a chance. And all the lives that he's turned around. He was a throwback. He didn't put on a show for everybody. He just told it like it is. Rest easy, Coach Rope. Rest easy, my friend.
Rest easy indeed, Jordy. I mean, you can check out on my Twitter account, at Clint Domain. There was somebody that from last year when the Cajuns wound up losing to Texas State and got eliminated in the Sun Belt Tournament. And what he said to the players after the game, it's a three-minute clip. I think we have it in the archive somewhere. I'm sure I'll dig it up sometime. That might air during the Best Of show on Friday. A little spoiler alert. But it is positively one of the big reasons why I've always been a big fan of head coach Tony Robichaux. You can check out the full quote on my Twitter account, at Clint Doming, if you want to kind of remember what's going on and just understand how much of a person he was. He was more of a great person than a coach. The coach role did not define him. That's basically the too long, didn't read version.
No, it didn't. He was a mentor to men. He was a mentor to young people. I think he got much more satisfaction in teaching people about faith, family, and the future. I think his main goal was to give lessons so that his players would become better men. Better fathers, better husbands, better all around. So, again, you can't find anybody to say a bad word, an unkind or unfair word about Tony Robichaux. He is one of a kind.
I'll say this, Jordy. If there is a person that could say that, I don't think that person is telling the truth. Because honestly, like every time you heard him speak, you listened. It was like you basically he didn't have to be. Yeah. A priest and just sit there on his pulpit. He told it like it is, and he explained it in the best way possible. Every time I heard him kind of utter anything, it was absolutely amazing. And I hate to kind of just start rambling on, Jordy, but again, it's definitely part of the process. I think a lot of people can agree with that sentiment. I think everybody's going to miss this dude tremendously. And I know I will, along with a lot of my family, who definitely was impacted by him in some way, shape, or form.
He always he never said no to me. I didn't bother him often, but when I did, he always said, "For you, Jordy, I'll do it." And always respect him for that. And just a good, good man, no doubt, no doubt. Is that our time? Is that our cue?
Yeah, Jordy.
Is that our cue? We got to get out of here. We got more stuff to come. All right, we got more stuff to come because the show goes on. Brought to you by Cajun Chef, the best hot sauce on the planet, the Biart family for nearly 90 decades. They put out the great product of Cajun Chef hot sauce. They use the finest spices and the finest peppers. Do yourself a flavor wherever you go. Bring yourself a bottle of Cajun Chef hot sauce. It's that good. It just is. 4th of July, that means family, friends, and hot dogs. Right up there, Coney Island. A Louisianian heading back again to try his run at the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest. His story's next. Welcome back on this very, very sad day in Acadiana, but Tony would say, keep on keeping on, and so that's what we will do. As the 4th of July holiday awaits, that means one thing and one thing only to me. That's the Nathan's 4th of July hot dog eating contest on the boardwalk, and we do this every year. Our good friend, Louisiana native, Adrian Morgan is back up on the East Coast to give it another go, and he's kind enough to join us today with his thoughts on the day before the big contest. Adrian, thank you very much for your time, buddy. How you feeling?
I'm feeling pretty good. You know, I'm up in New York City enjoying the sights and sounds.
We saw that the 30 for 30 episode coming up between Chestnut and Kobayashi. Is Chestnut hands down the greatest ever?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, Kobayashi had a few years to beat him. You know, Joey's just been kind of dominating ever since. And I think it's what, 11 out of the last 12. So I'd say he's probably taken over that title as the GOAT, as they say.
As the GOAT. All right, so, you know, look, you're not going there to win the thing unless something happens to him. I think you got your personal best 34 hot dogs consumed last time. Is that correct?
Actually, I ate 33 last year, and personal best is 39.
39. I guess the operative question is, what happened between one year and the next? How do you go down from 39 to 33?
More time to train.
Hot dogs were good? Were no good?
That kind of stuff. Yeah, usually the year 39, I was kind of in peak shape. Had a lot of time to train. I started off really early.
Okay.
Past couple of years, I've gotten, you know, busier at work, and that kind of always those little wrenching things.
Right.
This year, me and my wife had a baby, so looking to try to maybe hit 30 this year. Had a late start on training and everything, but you know, just trying to do my best.
That's awesome. First off, congratulations to you and your wife. That is awesome. How soon is the little one going to start? How soon is the little one going to start consuming hot dogs?
You know, it's funny you were talking about the 30 for 30 episode because it premiered last night, and I was feeding him last night, and we were watching it, and he stopped eating, and he was looking at the TV, and he was just like, he's just like enthralled with it. So I think the sooner the better.
That's awesome, man. He's going to be eating the hot dogs. Adrian Morgan, how many years in a row is this for you, and what keeps you going back?
This will be year 9 in a row. It's just a great time. I met all the guys. It's kind of like a family reunion between eaters. A lot of the contests we do, we don't see everyone at. Uh-huh. And Nathan's is the one, you know, the biggest prize purse that kind of brings everybody together. And we all go out and have a good time and compete against each other.
This is the Super Bowl of eating contest, correct?
Yes, it is. Be 30,000 people out surfing Stillwell, and I think viewership last year on ESPN was about a million. So, yeah, it's just, you know, only one that's televised. I wish they would televise a few more, but that's the one we got. Yeah. That's our Super Bowl.
Of all of them, and there's a ton of eating contests, which one do you feel the most comfortable with? Which one are you the best at?
I'd probably say it's either crawfish or chicken wings. I like being at Nathan's because it's, you know, it's a big show and all that stuff. But a couple months ago, we actually did a crawfish eating contest in Pensacola. Rouse's was opening up a new location over there, and I kind of showed up the competition at the crawfish. So I'd say probably crawfish is my best.
So that involves the peeling and all that everything, right? You got to start from scratch and just go. So what? How many did you consume in that thing?
So we they give us, you know, a certain number of pounds, and we only have 10 minutes to eat. So I made it through about 18 pounds of crawfish in 10 minutes.
In 10 minutes, 18 pounds? Are you serious?
I'm dead serious. Yeah, I think probably the next closest person to me went through about 11 or 12. So.
Oh my God, you gluttonous pig! I say that in terms of endearment. How in the Sam Hill do you do that?
It's just all hand feed, I guess. I work as a baker, so I'm working with my hands all day. And I would say that every Louisianian probably eats that much. It just takes them a little bit longer, you know. But yeah, it's
I've never come close to eating 18 pounds. Never.
You might have. You never know. I mean, once you start knocking back a few and you just keep eating throughout the day, but you know, by the time you're done.
So here's the big question, Adrian. I know we'll get back to the hot dog. I know you dip it in water in the hot dog with the bun. I mean, are you sipping suds, drinking some beers when you're doing the crawfish eating contest?
During the contest? No. Usually I just drink a little bit of water, just enough to kind of wash it down. I do have a beer right after, though. They put the beers on the table for it. So.
There you go. Adrian Morgan, kind enough to join us, going for his 9th consecutive year at the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest. You know, all records are made to be broken. There's no question about that. How many can Chestnut do, literally? What do you think is the limit for him in a 10-minute time frame? He's done up to in the 70s, correct?
Yeah, 74, he broke the record last year. I think Joey's capable of more. I've seen training videos where he's eating more. I really think it just comes down to having somebody pushing him alongside him. And, you know, after Kobayashi left, he really hasn't had – he lost 1 year. He had a kind of a down year. But he hasn't had someone kind of being able to hit 70 to kind of push him to another level. So I think he's 74 again this year. But, you know, I don't know if anybody will push him to 74, to be honest.
Have they ever placed you next to him or very close to him, or you can actually – that's got to be intimidating, as he's just consuming in rapid fashion, and you're like, oh, really? Seriously? Come on, dude.
Yeah, I mean, looking over at him, you kind of lose count, and I don't even bother anymore with hot dogs. But a lot of times he's sweating water a lot of places, so you kind of don't want to be next to him.
You got to throw the gauntlet down and challenge him. Come down to Louisiana. Let's do a crawfish eating contest. Take him on. Challenge him. See if he's man enough.
I wish he would. I try to tell him that stuff all the time, but he's kind of a meat and potatoes guy. He doesn't want to compete in something he doesn't really like. He is actually coming down. We're doing a pizza eating contest on July 14th in Metairie. Fat Boys Pizza Eating Contest. That'll be on July 14th.
This July 14th? This July 14th? Huh. Uh-huh. You gotta do me a favor. You gotta get his number for me. You gotta tell him I'm a good guy. You gotta get him on my radio show.
I'll let him know.
I gotta get Joey on.
I can get him on for you.
Help me.
I'll get him on.
All right, we'll get him before the pizza eating contest in Metairie. So is it just a plain cheese pizza, or is it the kitchen sink? What is it?
So this place, they have a restaurant eating challenge where it's a 2-foot slice of pizza. And the challenge in the restaurant is to see how fast you can eat it, or if you can eat it. And so in the contest, I think we're actually going to be eating 2-foot slices of pizza. So it might not be a high total, but it will probably still be impressive.
All right, I ask you this every year, so it's the day before. What is Adrian Morgan going to consume in the city that has more restaurants than the law allows? What do you do prior to knowing that you're going to try and eat 30 hot dogs in 10 minutes?
I just, stay hydrated, eat light, something that's not going to stay in the system very long. A lot of liquids, keep stomach empty. And, tomorrow I'll probably drink a lot of coffee in the morning, maybe a banana or two, and, I'll just be ready to go.
There you go. I wish you nothing but the best. Good luck. Have fun with it like you always do. I'll never invite you to a crawfish party at my house because I can't buy that many. You'll eat them too fast. But anything else might be a go. But always a pleasure. Good luck. Congratulations on your newborn. And get Chestnut for me, okay?
All right, sir. Thank you very much. Happy 4th of July.
All right, Adrian, take care. Adrian Morgan up in New York City the day before the Nathan's 4th of July hot dog eating contest. Joey Chestnut, just too good. But Adrian Morgan, that's still a lot. Have you ever eaten 18 pounds of crawfish? Seems like an awful lot to me. Anyway, all right, we'll be back. Michael Huguenin next here on the Jordy Helfrich Show.
Guess what day it is?
It's time to break down the biggest storylines this week with Michael Huguenin of The Athletic.
What's up, Michael?
Mike. What day is it, Mike?
Pump day!
Back after a week hiatus, Michael Huguenin of The Athletic, kind enough to join us. Mike, happy early 4th of July, and thanks for the time today, my friend.
Oh, no problem. Yeah, happy 4th to you guys as well, you and your listeners. And, it's hot here in Florida. I'm assuming it's pretty much the same there in Louisiana.
It's hot everywhere. We see so many of these, quote, consultant hires around the college football world. Ed Orgeron took it a step further. He brought in former USC and L.A. Ram coach John Robinson as a special senior consultant on his staff. Did that surprise you in any way?
No, the senior consultant, I guess, is sort of a wink, wink, nudge, nudge, because he's 83 years old. Right. Obviously, John Robinson's seen a lot of football. He also coached at UNLV for a while. Orgeron, I guess, thinks he can help with some things. Uh-huh. So, yeah, there's analysts everywhere, consultants everywhere. So if John Robinson can watch film and catch, pick up on something, or if he can watch a kid practice and pick up on something, yeah, it's a positive move.
Since you were last with us, the NCAA had a council that has adjusted the guidelines for granting eligibility waivers, the transfer portal, potentially making them tougher to get. Are you in favor of such or not?
No, I think that, you know, the amazing thing is football and men's basketball are athletes in those sports are treated differently than they are in every other sport.
Mm-hmm.
And no one has ever been able to explain to me why. You know, you have people upset that kids are allowed to transfer. That's ridiculous because you and I have discussed this many times. A typical college student can go to 15 schools if he wants it. No one cares. Why are athletes held to a different standard, mm-hmm. especially considering that if you're a player, you could have – let's say there's a player at State U. He conceivably could have four different position coaches in 4 years, and no one bats an eye. But if a player decides he wants to transfer, oh, my goodness, the world's coming to an end. The inmates are running the asylum. I'm of the opinion that every athlete, if you're a grad transfer, you can go wherever you want. And to me, if you're an undergrad transfer, you should be allowed to transfer once with zero penalty. In other words, I spent 2 years at State U. Now I want to go to Tech U. Fine, you're allowed to go. And after that one free transfer, maybe you have to sit out or whatever. But, you know, this was – I saw the whole transfer issue as a move toward giving players more freedom, which is positive. Now the pendulum appears to be swinging back the other way, and which just basically means the NCAA doing what the NCAA always does and messing with the student athlete.
Michael Hugan of The Athletic joining us this Wednesday edition of the Jordy Hultberg Show, 103.7 The Game. I'm surprised this has just come up because this has been something that's been faced around college athletics forever and a day, and that's the pressures and the influences that are facing college athletic trainers. A survey of trainers revealed concern over the coach's influence and the pressure to make calls not in the best interest of student athletes. In other words, you're hurt, but we need you. You're playing. And you, athletic trainer, I'm the boss. You clear him to play or else. And that's not good.
No, and I think it's that pressure's been around for a long time.
Yes.
You played. I mean, sure, you could probably think of three instances off the top of your head, teammates you played with, you're like, that dude's on the court? Oh, my goodness, I can't believe that. And I think the difference is now people are soliciting input from trainers and such about the issue. The NFL underwent that same kind of issue about 15 years ago because team doctors were employed by the team, and in some instances were told, you know, this dude needs to play. We need him, so you make sure he's playing. And now there's more of a league-wide effort now with the whole concussion thing. And I'm assuming that that's eventually going to happen in college sports as well, and that's a good thing.
Yes.
The amount of money in college athletics, why can't the SEC or the NCAA have, you know, neutral observers at every single game? And the idea that a coach can influence a team doctor or a team trainer, that should frankly scare everybody because that should not be happening. Coaches are obviously exceedingly powerful, but at some point someone needs to step in and say, you know, hey, this kid's 19 years old, and yeah, there's a big game Saturday, but this kid conceivably has 60 years left to go in his life. Let's not risk him, you know, injuring something that's going to impact him for the rest of those 60 years.
And I believe it should be a crime to play athletes that are not medically cleared. And I'm not talking about a crime from the NCAA. I'm talking about a serious crime with ramifications centered around that. Michael, you're
the
athletic.
That's an interesting point. You're right. I mean, because you're messing with a player's health potentially.
Yes.
And again, it's one game, and who knows, you know, if his knee's wrecked forever, if his concussion has repercussions 30 years down the road. There are instances, everybody knows it, where you know, a coach on Monday or Tuesday says that kid's not playing this week, and then he miraculously plays on Saturday, and everyone extols the virtues of the medical staff. What a great job they did getting him ready to play. Well, you know something? I bet in a lot of those cases that kid ain't ready to play, and they play him anyway.
That's right. Yeah, no question. Michael Hugin, The Athletic. I saw something good that made me smile a little bit, and that's the fact that UConn is going back to the Big East. I remember those Monday night basketball games with Syracuse and UConn and Georgetown and St. John's, and, man, that was good stuff. UConn belongs back in the Big East, in my opinion.
Yeah, this is an example of a school deciding, you know something, football does not mean everything athletically at this school.
There you go.
UConn is a basketball school. Going to the AAC, gigantic gut punch, frankly, a little bit lower punch to the basketball program. And now, saner heads prevail. We're going back to the Big East. And, you know, football there is a gigantic money suck. They are just throwing money down a pit, and they're not getting anything back for it. So I think there's some people up there who say, well, we need to go back to the FCS ranks where we were for a while before. I don't see how they can make it as an independent. Maybe they can. But this is an example of UConn deciding we're better off overall in the Big East for all our sports. Football is harm, but every other sport, this is a positive, and that's a good thing. And you're right. I think people of a certain age, maybe because we're old, 1980s and early 90s Big East basketball was awesome.
It was
awesome. And they had phenomenal coaches, phenomenal players, phenomenal games. You're right. UConn in the AAC, while the Big East still exists for basketball, was always – that makes no sense. You got UConn in the AAC and Creighton in the Big East. Well, what's going on? So now at least UConn's back in the Big East basketball where it belongs.
I got to send you a picture. My son sent me one. He was on his job. He was in New York City at some meetings. And he comes out of a restaurant and he bumps into Jimmy Boeheim. Says, "My dad's kind of a basketball guy. Do you mind if I take a picture with you?" He said he couldn't have been nicer. Said absolutely, no problem. That's not the Jim Boeheim I see on the sidelines. He's like a curmudgeon, an ornery curmudgeon, right?
Yeah, and I think that he got remarried about 20 years ago, I think, and she supposedly has changed him. He's gotten older and he's mellowed away from the court. I think even back in the old days, his off-court persona matched his on-court persona. He was a whiner. I think now people still look at him as a whiner of sorts, but I think he is off the court a pretty good dude. He supposedly has a phenomenal sense of humor, able to poke fun at himself as well as others. And I think that one thing that shows he is sort of mellowed, he and John Thompson legitimately hated each other in the 80s. And they did not like each other, and now they're I'm not sure they're buddies and stuff, but they get along and all that kind of stuff. I think Boeheim is an example of a guy who, because he looks like a whiner on the sideline, everybody assumes that's what he is.
That's right.
Away from the court, but he's not. And I think your son is found out. Hey, this guy's a pretty cool guy.
He was pretty cool
and a nice guy.
That's what he
said.
Exactly. What he said. Who gets out of coaching first? Krzyzewski or Boeheim, or are they just is that a race in and of itself?
That's interesting, because both these guys, I don't think anybody can argue these guys are extremely high level coaches. Krzyzewski, especially, look at all the national titles he's won, and they're also guys I think because they've been successful that a lot of people don't like. And Krzyzewski is another guy who on the sideline can get pretty irritated at referees, at players, at opposing teams, all that kind of stuff. But you're right, both these guys, I think college basketball is better the longer they stay around because they are high-level coaches. But you're right, at some point these guys are going to have to hang it up. And you wonder how much longer either one wants to go, because I know there's a lot of you're making a lot of money. At the same time, the pressure, it's basketball and football coaching in college has changed so dramatically. It's a 24/7, 365 job now. There's no relaxation for these guys.
Which sport has more pressure? Because we see Krzyzewski, we see a Boeheim, been doing it forever. We see a Bill Snyder in football who's finally retired. We see Spurrier stay in it and stay in it and stay in it. Saban says, I want to keep on coaching until I don't like it anymore. I mean, who's got the more stress, you think?
I think it sort of depends on the school. If you're the basketball coach at UConn, I would argue there's or the basketball coach at Duke, that is, or the basketball coach at Syracuse. That is an extremely successful job because you made it a successful job.
Yes,
and
yes.
A stressful job, the success is almost necessitated. Syracuse football, who cares? So, you know, Alabama football, Texas football, LSU football, Florida football, those are extremely stressful jobs. I think it sort of depends on the school, but I think if you're making big bucks and if everybody knows who you are, like Krzyzewski and Behan, there is a lot of stress involved because you always got to get players coming in. You know, you can't afford to allow. You know, we can have one bad recruiting class. Who cares? No, you can't. So yeah, I think it depends on where you coach, but yeah. Both jobs extremely stressful.
I kind of think you have more exposure in basketball because you're playing more games and there's more opportunities to be exposed than there is in football. But it's an interesting case. But both programs, both entities, golly, they must crave a vacation. I wonder what a vacation is like for them, if they can really, truly just decompress and get away from everything.
You're right. They can go to a nice place because they have – obviously, oodles and oodles of money. But just because you have oodles of money and you're, I'm in Florence, Italy next week. Well, maybe you're not relaxing like you should. So I think I told you the story. I a couple of years ago, I'm vacationing in Boca Grande, Florida, and we're at dinner. And, oh, my God, there's Dabo Sweeney, same place that I am eating. Dabo got nicer food than I did and got better service. But I talked to him. A couple months later, I said, hey, you know, you don't know me, but I vacationed the same place you did, all that kind of stuff. And he said, yeah, I'm sure you were more relaxed than I was. And I'm thinking, yes, I was. Because my assumption is that even when a coach is on vacation, he's taking phone calls, he's sending out texts, he's being updated continuously on what's going on with the program. And, yeah, I was in the same place as Dabo Sweeney, but my assumption is, yeah, I had a more enjoyable and relaxing time because I'm not Dabo Sweeney.
He's probably there now for the 4th of July. This is when coaches take their vacations just before the meetings begin and the onslaught starts. So he's probably there. Nick's probably there. And all that. So what's the Hugan and fam? What are you cooking up for the 4th of July holiday? Come on now. I know you can work the grill.
Yeah, that's all. We're just working the grill, but yeah, we're not going anywhere. No vacation, no big time vacation. Hey, when you live in Orlando, there's no need to take a vacation.
That's right.
But you're right. The interesting thing you pointed out about coaches taking vacation, and we did a story with Justin Fuente, the Virginia Tech coach, a couple weeks ago. We asked, it was a Q&A, and do you take a vacation? And he sort of hemmed and hawed, and basically it came out that he and his wife and kids were over the 4-day July 4th weekend going to a lake. Lake House.
Mm-hmm.
That was it. And you're like, my God, dude, you're making like $3 million a year. Give me something, that's the fancy part of your vacation. No, he did admit that he was going home to visit his folks in Tulsa. And he thought that was a cool vacation, but he also sort of tongue-in-cheek said, not a lot of folks want to go to Tulsa. But coaches, I mean, you're right, it is different. So they have a lot of perks, obviously. But the pressure is mind-boggling.
With modern technology, social media, no matter where they go, somebody's going to recognize them. I know they don't take regular airlines like we do. But anywhere they go, they do not have any peace. I guess that's why they like to get to their offices early and close the door, and they can no telling what they're doing there. Nobody works that hard that long. Nobody.
Take
a nap.
Right, and that's one thing I always like Spurrier because he would always say, coaches sleeping in their office, that's ridiculous. Because, like you said, what can you be doing at 2 a.m. that you couldn't have already done earlier in the day? And that's, Spurrier loved playing golf in the off season, but I think he also admitted that the longer he went in his career, the less golf he played. So.
Well, Michael Huguenin, on behalf of all of us here, we thank you for your time. I hope you and your family have a great 4th of July. Don't burn anything, but cook it right. and we always look forward to talking to you, man. Have a great holiday.
All right, you too. Appreciate it. Talk to you next week.
All right, take care. Michael Huguenin of The Athletic. We'll be back to wrap things up. Off to a 4-day holiday weekend. Yes, indeed. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show. 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. Welcome back to the Jordy Helfrich Show on this Wednesday, July the 3rd. Let's go straight to what we do each and every day at this time of day on this day in sports history, July 3rd, the year 2010. Jim Thome hit career home runs number 573 and 574 to pass Harmon Killebrew of the Minnesota Twins on the all-time home run list. Jim Thome. One of the best long ball hitters ever on this day, July 3rd, 2010. If it's your birthday today, happy birthday from all of us to all of you. Hope you have a great day. You share it with happy 57th birthday to Tom Cruise. If it's your anniversary, happy anniversary. I hope you keep adding year after year after year to it. A very sad day today with the passing of Coach Robe, who has left an indelible positive mark on the entire Raging Cajun athletic program and to so many other individuals he's come across in his life. His faith has always been out front and center stage in his life. Our very heartfelt prayers and thoughts to his wife, Colleen, his three children, Ashley, Justin, and Austin, his eight grandchildren in Lon Paul, Ava, Sylvia, Liam, Olivia, and Levi Moody, and Evelyn and Rosalind Robichaud. And to his father, who's still around, Ray Robichaud, and his three brothers. Tony was always kind, generous of his time. He never said no to me. I just pulled up text messages that we shared through the course of time for one another, always of a positive nature, always with a lesson to tell and a story to go along with it. You can't replace a Tony Robichaud. You can't. When I found out, I just took my breath away. It just hit me deep and hard because Tony, despite all of his success, always put the attention and the focus back to his faith in God. Truly a gentleman's gentleman. And all of us will miss him. He said, you know, it's after he got his 1,000th career win in 2015, the quote was, it's not about me. It's never been about me. Some call this my program. It isn't. It's the university's program, and I'm fortunate enough that they hired me to manage it. We're supposed to glorify God, not glorify man. God gets all the glory. I don't want it. You find me one person that has anything negative to say about the late, great Tony Robichaud, and I just won't believe it. I just will not believe it. What a void that's left. What tremendously large shoes to try to fill. It's impossible. It truly is impossible. You know, I talk for a living, and I'm finding it very, very difficult to find the proper words to explain what Tony Robichaud meant to me and what he has meant to so many others. But he was a man's man. He shook your hand like a man. He looked you in the eye. And when he spoke, you knew he was telling you the truth. Rest in peace. And God bless you, Tony Robichaud. I hope everyone has a wonderful 4th of July holiday. And we'll be back Monday, live and in living color, here on 103.7 The Game. Until then, I'm Jordy Hultberg. God bless.